is episode 63, and today we'll be talking about sensory processing and some ideas on how to help our kids become as independent as possible with getting their sensory needs met. As an OT, my main goal for everyone that I work with, and frankly for everyone that I know, is for them to be able to live as independently as possible. The whole idea with occupational therapy is to help people find or develop the skills to do our quote-unquote job independently. When we talk about jobs in this context, though, we aren't just talking about our employment or our job that earns money to pay the bills. Of course, that is one job that many of us need to be able to do, and many of us want to be able to do. But in the context of OTs, we consider all of the jobs and the roles that people play in their everyday life. We usually talk about this as being our daily routines or things that we do on a regular basis. Some people use the phrase skills for the job of living when talking about occupational therapy. Each person has their own roles in their life, and each person has their own jobs or occupations. As an adult, we might say our jobs are being a grandma, a wife, a mom, a sister, a daughter, a student, an office assistant, a lawyer. You might be the grocery shopper for your home, or the person who cooks the family meals, the laundry person, the person that pays the bills, a runner, a gardener, a cat owner, a yoga participant, or any other thing you take part in on a regular basis. Of course, these are all things we think of doing as adults. So you might be wondering how this applies to kids. Well, for kids, we might think of these things as end results, or things that we hope and plan on them being able to do when they are adults. But as kids, we need to do all of the prep work to get them to the point where they will be able to do all of the things they want or need to do as an adult to be as independent as they can. When most people think of being independent, they usually think about it as the person can do everything for themselves without needing anyone else's help. Well, in some ways, that is how you can think about it. But if you think about it in this way, a person who can manage to get all of their wants and needs met in some way, instead, it still holds true that they are managing everything. But this can also include being able to get other people to help you achieve what you want or need to do. For example, let's say a person who usually drives themselves to the grocery store to get food for the week. For any reason, maybe they twisted their ankle and can't walk well right now, or they have the flu and they don't feel good enough to get out of bed. These are both temporary issues, but ones that most of us could find a way to relate to. So, they get online and order their groceries, pay for the groceries, and wait for them to be delivered 2 hours later. When the delivery arrives, they answer the door and take the groceries from the person and put them away in the appropriate places in their kitchen. In this scenario, I would still consider this adult to be independent. They weren't the one to drive to the store and physically pick out all of the groceries there and bring them home, but they were able to manage the situation to still get all of the same things done by having another person do part of the job. But they still managed and arranged for that other person's part of the job to get their own needs and wants met. Another example is changing the oil in your car. This is something that any person who owns a car has to do. But it is not something that all of us know how to do or even want to learn how to do for ourselves. Even those people that know how to do it, those people that have the skill of changing the oil in their own car, don't always want to do it either. This is why we have mechanic shops, right? In this case, I would consider all of you people out there who take your car to an auto shop to get the oil changed, independent for finding a way to either take the car there yourself and request the service, or find someone, if you're like me, I enlist my husband to do the job of taking the car for me to get it done. So when thinking about independence with kids, we are working on the skills they will need to have in order to find a way to be as independent as possible when they are adults too. This is true for all kids, not just kids with special needs. As in the car and the oil change example, there was no special need involved. It is often just a matter of preference for how you manage to get the oil changed. As I mentioned before, being independent can and does include finding ways to get your wants or needs met, even if it means coordinating other people to help get the job done. This can sometimes be a hard concept to grasp, or at least something that we don't always think about in this way. Most of the time, we just think about being independent means we do things ourselves. But I hope you're starting to think about it a little differently now. If a person can find a way to let other people know what it is that they want or need to do or to get done, that is still being independent. If you have no way of indicating what you like or what you want to do, you become dependent on other people to figure it out, or at least try to figure it out. And you just have to hope they get it right. This is one of the reasons why we teach kids how to ask for help at a very early age, and how to generally ask for things that they want as well. Kids are not independent creatures. Obviously, they aren't going to cook dinners and manage the checkbook for us or for themselves. But there are many things they can be independent with, and we use this time wisely to begin teaching them ways to become more independent as they grow. Back to the asking for help example. You might think at first that asking for help makes them dependent on you to help them with things. But if you start to look at it in this new context of them asking you for help, is a way for them to be independent because they are getting their wants or needs met by enlisting the help of someone else who knows how to do the certain thing. Even kids that aren't talking yet or able to verbally say what they're wanting can communicate that they need help with things. For example, they might have a wind-up toy or some other type of toy that they haven't quite figured out how to make it turn on yet. If they bring it to you and hold it out for you to take, you can pretty quickly figure out that they want you to help them turn it on. This game usually repeats several hundred times before they finally get tired of it, but the repetition is exactly what they need. Not only is the repetition good for practicing this way of socializing and communicating with you, but it reinforces this over and over again when they know that they are able to find a way to get you to do what they wanted. Now, being the OT, I would take this opportunity to make sure they are watching how to turn the toy on so they can eventually make it work by themselves and become independent in another way with using that toy. As the child progresses through their language abilities, moving hopefully from handing you things they want to pointing to things they want, like their drink that's way up there on the counter, to signing drink or help or another sign depending on what the item is, to attempting to say the word and eventually saying the name of the thing they want or saying help. All of these are done through you modeling the things for them and teaching them how to do it. A lot of times we work on this by giving choices of things during their daily routines. One example, when it's time to get dressed. You, as the adult, have to decide what the appropriate type of clothing will be for the weather and the conditions of your schedule. But once you find two items that you approve of, then you can show them the two items. Let's say they can pick between this shirt or that shirt, or this dress and that dress. I would usually recommend offering the same clothing item, like a short sleeve shirt, but in a different color or pattern. Maybe one is pink and one is yellow, but otherwise they are basically the same. Of course, this might need to be altered depending on the child and what their individual needs and abilities are. The crazy thing is, today I was planning on talking quite a bit about sensory processing, and I've managed to not mention that at all yet. I'm going to try and tie it all together now, and I think I will be able to do that and make sense with it too. When I'm working with families who have a child with sensory needs, I get the question a lot about, will I have to do these things with them forever? This usually comes up after we've been swinging their child in a blanket for several minutes, and we're all starting to break a sweat from the workout we're getting by doing this. It is a valid question, and I certainly understand where it is coming from. Raising a child with high sensory needs can be and definitely is exhausting a lot of the time. Most of the time, my answer is no, you shouldn't have to do this forever. But your child may need these types of sensory activities even when they are older, at least to some degree. This is where we start to tie in to the earlier part of the show. We want these kiddos to become independent with getting their sensory needs met. Again, when our kids are younger, they are not independent creatures yet. They still rely on us to know what they want or need most of the time. This is the same with sensory processing. Although some kids naturally gravitate towards certain types of activities based on how their body feels, they don't always know the best way or the most effective way of getting their sensory needs met to make their body feel good. However, using the two choices activity is great for this. You can have two different sensory activities available and let them choose which one they want to do. Now, before we make these activities available for them to choose from, we have to figure out what it seems like they would benefit from the most right now and pick options from that section. For example, if they are rolling around on the floor seeking some type of vestibular and or proprioceptive input, then we are probably not going to offer an activity that involves sitting in a chair at a table, like coloring, as an option. Instead, I would pick two activities that involve vestibular or proprioceptive stimulation, or both. Maybe offering a yoga ball and a mini trampoline. Or they can choose between a blanket that we use for swinging and a crash pad for jumping off the bottom step and landing in the pad. If your child uses pictures, that makes this even easier because you can just show them two pictures of the activities you are offering and let them easily pick from that rather than sometimes getting the large items out for them to see before they choose. Of course, sometimes kids aren't developmentally ready to make choices, so it is our job to play around with them and just start trying to find different activities until we figure out from their reactions to the activities which ones they prefer. And we work on labeling the activities and showing the pictures also so they start to put those things together. That way later when they are able to make the choices, they will already be familiar with those items and pictures. Ultimately, we want to see the kids seeking out the appropriate activities for what their bodies are craving and doing those activities for themselves when they're able to. These activities will change and evolve over time. So, as they continue to get older, if they still have sensory needs or preferences, they will be able to do them on their own. And you can always help guide them in certain directions based on what you know has worked for them in the past. This could be something like gymnastics if they are a person who really likes movement and deep pressure. There are many different ways to get both of those things in gymnastics. Maybe it's a swimming league or just finding a place that has a swimming pool where they can go and swim when they feel the need. Swimming can be organizing and calming for many kids in addition to just being fun in general. But they don't have to find things to sign up for or pay for. It can be, and many things should be set up as part of their daily routines. This way, they are getting the sensory needs met every day without really having to think about it all the time. When things can be part of their routine, they can happen naturally so that sometimes it doesn't even seem like they're doing anything at all. This can be things like taking a shower in the morning instead of at night to help them wake up or get their body going for the day. Or using a vibrating toothbrush, like a spin brush, as part of their daily toothbrushing routine. Chewing gum can be used on days when they are feeling jittery or when they have a test to take at school or a meeting at work to help with organizing and calming their body this way. Chewing gum provides deep pressure in a way that many people don't think about. It isn't something that most people are willing to give their young children, but it is a good strategy for calming and organizing when they're able to handle it appropriately. Having a weighted blanket or a heavy comforter might be enough to help with getting a good night of sleep. Even as they get older, this can be effective, not only for sleeping better, but it could have longer lasting effects during the day, too. It is very important to start talking to your kids as early as possible about their sensory needs. You can explain things at whatever their developmental level is while they're growing. It is important for them to understand as much as possible what strategies and activities are helpful for their body and system to set them up to be successful for their day at either home, school, or work, or wherever they are going each day. If they can get some understanding of what helps them, they will be able to figure out which activities to do and at what times to do them. Start using the language with them early on so they can figure out what works and when. The language doesn't have to be complicated. Something like, "Let's wake up your body and get you moving more," to a child who has low registration or low arousal at the same time as you are helping them set up on a yoga ball and bounce. Or, "Let's help your body feel calm and safe," to a child who is falling down a lot or having a hard time sitting to do a puzzle or a play activity. At the same time as you're rolling them up in a blanket like a tortilla, rolling up around their body, or you're giving their arms, legs, head, and body squeezes for deep pressure. Using words like that can help them start to realize why you are having them do those certain activities and what they will hopefully feel like as a result of doing them. After the sensory activity, if you notice a difference in their body actions, you can talk about that too. Say something like, "Now your body is calm, and we're ready to play with the blocks." Or if they're able to understand, you can ask them if they feel better after doing the sensory activity. And talk about how the squeezing on their body or the wrapping up in the blanket helps their body feel good. All of these strategies are good starting points to use with kids so they can learn how different activities, movements, deep pressure, and all the other things can make them feel good or make them feel better after doing them. People with sensory processing issues can have trouble with self-awareness, so anything you can do to try and point these things out to them are great. When they're in the moment feeling a certain way, then feeling a different way after doing the activities, they might be able to feel the effects and hopefully remember that for next time. That will go a long way towards them starting to figure out for themselves what activities they need to do next to be able to feel that way again. This is an important skill that will benefit them for their whole life and set them up to become or maintain their independence as an adult. It is also a good idea once you figure out which types of activities work for them and they prefer to do, that you have these activities available for them. This might sound obvious, but trust me, it's not. If they like jumping on a mini trampoline, have yours in a convenient place where they can just go over and start jumping when they feel like it, as long as they're safe enough to do it whenever they want. We don't spend every minute of every day guessing which sensory activity they will need to do next. Sometimes we have to cook dinner or send an email or other things that maintain our lives. It would be great if during those moments they could get their own sensory needs met if they decide to and if they are able to. So by having some things available where they can get to them by themselves, you will start this process of them figuring out what they need on their own. You will still need to continue helping them, I'm sure, for a while, but any chance to start letting them explore things on their own and having them be successful because they didn't need your help to do it are great for their self-confidence and reinforce their thinking about their own sensory needs. I realize we can't have all things out all of the time. For example, water beads or Play-Doh, those things need to be supervised with younger children and sometimes with older children. But the things that are safe for their developmental and physical level are great to leave out in common areas when possible. I also understand that we don't need a lot of large equipment and things taking up our family rooms and kitchens, and I'm not suggesting that you need to do that. I'm just thinking about, within reason, finding some ways to make them available for what works with your family and your home setup as much as possible. If they have to rely on you to get everything out for them all of the time, this will not encourage them to start being independent with their sensory needs. On a slight side note, but regarding sensory activities, I think it is important to mention that when we talk about activities, to either get you going and make you feel more alert, or activities that help you feel calm and ready to stay still and focus. That one activity could have the opposite and therefore probably the unintended effect for different people. Let me put it this way. Bouncing on a large therapy or yoga ball, this activity for a child who needs to become more alert because they are in a state of low arousal or low registration can help get their body feeling more energized. The intense movement of bouncing up and down gets the fluid in their ears moving finely, and this can be stimulating for them at least temporarily. I would also guess that you will have to be the one, or an adult has to be the one, to make the bouncing happen. They will most likely be sitting and waiting for something to happen, but not necessarily actively participating in the actions of bouncing. After the bouncing, they should be alert enough to be able to tune in and participate in the learning activity for a brief amount of time. A child who is having a hard time sitting still to play something with you, and they are moving all around the place, someone called a sensory seeker, will most likely be very active with the ball and will probably push off the ground and help get themselves bouncing even higher and more intensely. They will be having a great time and smiling and eventually making more sounds and possibly some eye contact with you if they don't already. This child has a vestibular system that needs extra movements and more intense movements in order to satisfy their sensory need. Once that is met, they should be able to focus and have a brief amount of time for learning after the bouncing ends. So in their case, this is not to wake them up, but to get them to be more calm. It's the opposite of the first situation. Of course, all of these scenarios are major generalizations, and your child may or may not react in the same way as I mentioned. However, these are the things we think about and start to look for in each of the kids we are doing these activities with. We all have to be good observers, therapists, teachers, and parents to make sure we are helping these kiddos as much as possible. Parents are a critical piece to all of this because you are with them the most and for the longest amount of time. So make sure we are educating parents out there and helping them understand all of this, especially as it relates to their own child. We want to set their kids up to have the most success, and it truly starts when they are very young, so don't wait. If you like this show and you like the information that I'm providing to you, please let me know that by supporting me on Amazon. All of your purchases you make by using the links on my website help me continue to be able to put out more episodes. Thank you to those of you who already support me this way. I really do appreciate it. My website is mymidwesttherapy.com. That's all I have for today. Thank you so much for listening.